This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, September 19th, 2016. I'm Caleb Brown. This year's Economic Freedom of the World Index details the strong relationships between economic freedom and the institutions it fosters and higher standards of living. Ian Vasquez, director of the Cato Institute's Center for Global Liberty and Prosperity, discusses the latest findings.
Economic freedom is strongly related to prosperity and to growth. And we now have several decades of empirical data showing that the more economically free a country is, the better its performance, not just on economic indicators, but on the whole range of human development indicators and indicators of human well-being, from infant mortality to access to clean water to life expectancy. The numbers are really startling. Countries that are in the most free quartile of this ranking have incomes that are around $40,000 per capita. If you go to the next free quartile, the average incomes are about half as much. So that even what are apparently small differences in levels of economic freedom make big differences in outcomes.
People would like to say, oh, well, you're talking about rich countries. So, of course, they can afford to have economic freedom.
There have now been dozens and dozens of academic studies looking into the relationship between economic freedom and outcomes like growth and prosperity. And almost without exception, they show that the causation goes from economic freedom and the policies and institutions of economic freedom to those outcomes.
Which countries have improved the most?
If you look at the years for which we have data and that this report actually records, the countries that have made tremendous progress have been countries like China and India, the two most populous countries on the planet. They're still relatively unfree countries, but they started from such a low point in terms of economic freedom. They had very repressed economies and very low incomes that explains why those two countries have had high growth rates for decades. We're talking about growth rates between 8 and 10% for decades. And that also explains why global inequality, which had been going up for centuries, in this era of globalization, when economic freedom increased, has started to decline. The rich and the gap between the rich and the poor in the world has been closing. And the gap in other indicators has been closing even faster, like lifespans, like access to safe drinking water and so on.
How much of that gap closing has been rich, economically free countries losing ground?
Only partially and only in the last several years, especially since the financial crisis, which led so many countries like the United States and the OECD advanced economies to increase their size of government, their regulation, and so on, which has reduced their economic freedom. But there, too, we've seen a convergence. If you just look at levels of economic freedom in poor countries and levels of economic freedom in rich countries, you've seen that gap close. And most of it is due to the increase in economic freedom in poor countries. And in every continent, you've seen an increase in economic freedom in the last several decades, with some countries like Chile and Estonia and Peru standing out, Botswana and so on in Africa. And so that convergence in terms of economic freedom helps explain why there's been this dramatic drop in global poverty levels from 30 and 40% a few decades ago to less than 10% in the past year. This is unprecedented in world history.
Now, it's a great untold story, and we have to repeat it over and over that poverty has been in staggering decline.
The data speaks for itself. People sometimes think that things are getting worse, but that's a very uninformed view.
I feel like I ask you this every time we talk about this report, but what are the relationships between countries that have good policies, good institutions with respect to economic freedom and their neighbors?
Well, what you tend to see is that groupings of countries tend to follow similar kinds of policies. So you see, for example, Central Europe, which since the early 1990s is what I would consider a success story, not just in terms of increases in economic freedom, but economic performance and higher levels of political freedom. This makes sense because what we've seen is that there's a strong relationship between economic freedom and political and civil liberties. More economic freedom is correlated with those other liberties. We see in Latin America some countries that have gone populist and other countries that have increased their levels of economic freedom. Those tend to be the ones that are on the Pacific coast, with a couple of exceptions. And they're the ones that have signed free trade agreements with the United States and that are negotiating other free trade agreements, whereas the ones that have reduced their levels of economic freedom, and those really are the exceptions, really stand out, like Venezuela, like Argentina, like Bolivia. Another interesting observation from the data that the Economic Freedom Project has been collecting over the years is the drop in economic freedom of the rich countries. This has not only occurred in the United States, though the United States is the major economy whose level of economic freedom has dropped most dramatically. The average fall in economic freedom of the OECD countries has also been notable. And like the United States, in the past year or two, has started to pick up, but it hasn't reached the high level that it reached sometime in the past decade. So that you see sort of a pattern of several decades leading up into the year 2000 and a little bit beyond of steady increases in economic freedom among the rich countries, and then a big fall, and then starting to increase again after sort of the recovery from the Great Recession, but not yet up to the levels of where it was before. And certainly in the United States, it's still far behind, which is why it ranks 16th on the ranking rather than two or three, which had traditionally been the case for decades up until the year 2000.
I spoke recently with Marion Tupi, and he described an Economist article that had been written in 2000 about Africa, and they called it a hopeless continent. And that was at the beginning, he noted, of many countries in Africa really making great strides from, again, a fairly low baseline, as a lot of these countries have had. But what are the positive stories in Africa in terms of economic freedom, economic development, and wealth?
Well, every region of the world has increased its level of economic freedom since the 1990s. Africa really has always been the laggard in terms of policies, institutions, and social and economic outcomes. It still is, but today the story is way different than it used to be because there is actually more economic freedom than before. Some countries, like Botswana, like Ghana, have introduced reforms that have propelled them beyond what obviously the economists expected. New technologies have come in, which have liberated people. And that's partially the result of some deregulation, but partially because those areas like cell phone use weren't regulated. And this has empowered millions of poor people who have cell phones and can conduct business better and are enriching themselves. Africa still lags behind. It definitely benefited from the commodities boom in the last decade, and so that increased its growth rates. And if it wants to continue to perform like it did before, it really does need to continue to reform. And countries in the developing world that have increased their levels of economic freedom are discovering that. China is discovering that now as its growth rates have fallen to 6%, which is low for China. Country that's been used to 10% growth rates, and probably that number, which is the official number, is not the true number. Maybe the real number is 4 or 5%. They're discovering that if they want to continue high growth rates, they need to continue reform. They need to continue to increase levels of economic freedom.
How does this report either jibe with or contradict the efforts or claims of what we would call the aid industrial complex, that is the groups that sort of are, their existence is based on providing aid, monitoring aid in various poor countries around the world?
I think the main message of this report is a positive one, which is that countries can be the drivers of their own destiny, that the progress of a country depends on its domestic policies and institutions, and much less on outside factors like geography or the weather or foreign aid, for that matter. And if you look at the relationship between foreign aid and growth, there is no relationship. If you look at the relationship between foreign aid and economic freedom, there's not a strong relationship or increases in economic freedom. Sometimes the aid industry says we should provide aid to promote reforms. As it turns out, that doesn't really work. Countries take the money and don't reform. Or countries reform and it has no relationship to the decades of aid that they had been receiving. It has to do with domestic political and economic situations. So the bottom line, the takeaway, is that the policies and institutions of countries that are determined locally are the ones that determine in the medium and the long term the performance of those countries.
Ian Vasquez directs the Cato Institute Center for Global Liberty and Prosperity. Subscribe to this podcast at iTunes, Google Play, and with Cato's iOS app. And follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.